You know, it's generally conceded among the great minds of history that the ultimate form of the insult is the snub. Nothing really bothers anybody so much as being ignored, so along those lines, I'm going to tell you an epic true tale of adventure from my very own misspent youth. This is a true story actually happened to me in my freshman year of college at the University of Florida. We went to watch a basketball game against Florida State. So we were filing into the tiny gym. There was a number of people outside, four or five, and they were handing out newspapers, the school newspaper called The Alligator. And they were handing it out to everybody who went in. It was free, so no skin off their nose there. And I said, I don't want one. A lot of people said that. I said, just take it and do what everybody else does. I don't know who the geniuses were who came up with this idea, but nevertheless, that's exactly what we did. Went inside the stadium, completely full, obviously, full gym, because it was a big game with a big rival. As it turned out, everybody was just talking until it came time to introduce the teams. And since the visiting team was introduced first, the announcer got on the air and said, ladies and gentlemen, the Florida State Seminoles. And at that instant, 20 or 30 or 40 people just simply took out their newspaper and just opened it and started to read it in complete silence. And everybody got it. And within 20 seconds, the entire stadium was filled with people just reading the newspaper, just casually reading the newspaper, not a word. All of the players were being announced, smattering of applause from the FSU fans, but all the rest of us were in on it instantly. Just, yeah, it's interesting. They're going down the roster, doing this. And then as soon as they said, and now you're Florida Gators, and the crowd went crazy. That was the greatest snub I've ever been a part of, and I know that may not sound like much in the way of action today, but I really do think that's the best course for Inauguration Day. So I think the art of the snub in this particular case is precisely how we should treat Joe Biden's inauguration. I think we should utterly ignore it. As Glenn Reynolds points out, nothing suggests unity and legitimacy than a Capitol filled with tens of thousands of armed National Guards, barricades, and all the rest. What if nobody shows up? Certainly, what we learned from January 6th was that there will be provocateurs in abundance. And this time, I think we ought to just let them hang themselves. But in any event, that's what I plan to do. I plan to not watch it. I plan to have nothing to do with it. I don't, as far as I'm concerned, I'm going to be reading a newspaper. And that would be my advice to you for whatever it's worth. But once we get past this Inauguration Day, then we have to figure out what we're going to do after that. And that's going to require some concrete actions. And we don't have a lot of time to act. Now, in order to get into some of those actions, I should probably start with a number. And that number is 101. We are 101 members short of reaching that 1,000 member goal. I know you're sick of hearing it. I'm sick of saying it. Just consider me to be PBS, only without the re-education camps. 2 days from now, I'm done talking about this for 3 months. You're not going to hear it from me ever again. 101 members to get there. We are so close. We're so close. We know that the ones of you who are still left who are thinking about it are the tough nuts to crack, but come on, let's get us over this hurdle, please. In the 3 or 4 or 5 days that we've been talking about citizen government, maybe a week, maybe a little bit more, over at BillWhittle.com in the forums that have been established, there's already a Moving Back to America group, and they've already done things like start to assemble lists of potential candidates, people that they know, people from each state, people who might be good for this kind of thing, people who might be good citizen legislators, and so on. And all of the actions that we're going to take now have to be concrete actions. I got an email, critical email, that really got my attention, and it stung because it had a lot of truth to it. And it basically said, okay, enough of the recriminations, and now it's time to get on to practical matters. Now, as it turned out, I kind of think I turned that corner 2 weeks ago, but nevertheless, here we are. So what do we actually do? If I had to look at this from a military point of view, I would say, okay, is it time to retreat? It is, yes, actually. It's time to fall back and regroup. Regroup is a better word than retreat, because retreat has retreat has negative connotations to it. Why don't we just borrow the words of great American heroes and say we are advancing to the rear? And all I mean by that is not to say that we're going to walk away from these social challenges, economic challenges. On the contrary, if we're going to fight these things effectively, we have to fight them from a position of strength. And what that means is concentration of strength. The battlefield, the cultural battlefield, economic battlefield, political battlefield, is so enormous, and the forces arrayed against us are so powerful, and it's pointless to deny that. But I think that they have grossly blundered in the wake of the election. And I mean really significantly made a giant tactical error. This business of destroying or trying to destroy Parler is... It's an unforced error on their part. They'd already achieved what they meant to achieve. And this simply shows people precisely what they're all about. So now we're faced with a situation that to me looks something like this. Despite the best efforts of Google and Facebook and Twitter and all the rest, they will not be able to stop alternative platforms from appearing. Even if these platforms are based in other countries, it may come to that. And then we're going to realize that these alternative media, social media outlets that are just now coming up, you cannot keep them down. They're trying their level best, but they can't stop doing that. What that's going to mean is that these are going to become extremely effective social connections for conservatives. Just to give you an example, when I signed up for Parler and Wire and Signal and all of these other secure text messaging apps, I immediately heard from conservatives I haven't heard from in a long time. I just, four or five people I just hadn't heard from in a long time just popped up because it's a new network and we're going to own those networks. And using those networks, we'll be able to do what we haven't done before, and that is use the internet in order to affect economic change. And now we get down to the main point here. Many people have remarked on this idea of one term and talked about how impractical it is. Fair enough, that is a legitimate criticism of this. But what I'm proposing is that it is impractical and at an enormous disadvantage if you're playing on the same board you were playing on before. I'm not talking about putting disadvantaged pieces on the same chessboard. I'm talking about playing on a completely different table. I'm talking about playing on an utterly different table where things like fundraising and seniority and all that, it's meaningless. You trumpet. That's what you do. You trumpet. You simply start operating on a different level. The politics becomes politics of a different level. Your entire pitch is that we are not at war with each other. We're at war with the politicians that put us into this trouble. That message will resonate with 85% of the American public. And if you're going to take the entire game off of the existing board and put it onto a new board, whoever gets to that new board first is going to have an advantage. And maybe now some of these ideas are starting to coalesce in my mind and perhaps in yours as well. What we're talking about doing here is reinventing the entire game politically, absolutely reinventing it with a clean sheet of paper. Using the principles and the laws laid out in the Constitution, we are going to move from politics as usual and all of the connections and all of the fundraising and all of the back scratching and all of it. We're going to simply take our pieces off of this board that has done nothing but ruin this country and other countries as well throughout history. And we're going to move them to a different board. And when we're on a different board, that's going to be our board. That's going to be our battleground. We own it. We understand it. We set it up. It's our rules now. And they will not know how to play on that board. They will not know how to play that game. If we start doing some of the things that I've suggested and what the members are doing right now at BiltWhittle.com and elsewhere, actually starting to build the structures, really starting to build the structures, taking names and taking notes, then we'll be able to move politics out of the realm of cynics and crooks and idiots and move it into the realm of citizens and honesty and an appeal to values and morality. Every time we talk politics, we lose. Every time we talk philosophy, morality, we win. So my plan is to stop playing on their battlefield. My plan is to take the fight into the air. And that's what I think we're going to do, and I think we're going to be successful about that. That's the political situation, but the thing that most people don't really fully appreciate yet is this. We are going through an entire restructuring of the entire idea of an economy. 7,000 years ago, the first one happened when hunter-gatherers realized that certain kinds of grass could grow and that you could grow this grass on a regular basis, harvest it, and feed your population. That meant you didn't have to be hunters and gatherers and wanderers anymore. The agricultural revolution led to the rise of cities because you could finally grow enough food to feed a group of people without them moving around all the time. In fact, you could grow enough food in a city using agriculture so that not every single person had to go out there throwing spears at mammoths and collecting berries. You could have musicians and philosophers and scientists and scribes and all the rest of it. You could also have politicians, unfortunately, and that's where we get into some of our troubles. But the agricultural revolution happened 7,000 years ago. It's the first time that ever happened. 300 years ago, round numbers, the second big thing happened with the Industrial Revolution, where all of a sudden all of the people who used to work in the farms and the in dispersed had to concentrate into cities. And once they were in cities, they had to work in factories. The factory has to have the raw materials coming into it, has to be relatively close to the factory. So you have to have a means of bringing raw materials in, like ships or trains. And then you take them from here and move them over to here. You make your widgets, and then you have to distribute them back out again through ships and trains. And that's all very centralized, very vertical. That's the Industrial Revolution. And for the last 20, 30 years or so, we've been moving out of that into the information age. And it was Thad McConnell in a speech that I attended that blew my circuits when he basically held up a smart device and said, this is the end of politics as we know it. It's the end of top-down government. It's the end of enormous overspending government, because using this device, I can place an order for steel from China or from wherever, and it'll show up in my door in a week and a half. I don't have to go through the government to do any of this stuff. And now we come to the point of the broad view of what lays ahead of us after the snub that I plan to deliver personally on the 20th. When we move to these alternative platforms without those restrictions, it will be like a heart bypass operation. My dad had one in 1991. I called him 6 hours after the surgery, asked how he felt. I thought I'd be barely able to. I'm okay. How you doing, Dad? Billy, I have never felt better in my life. I feel 20 years younger. Really? Yes. I feel like I'm alive. It's because he was getting oxygen. His body was actually getting oxygen because there was stuff moving through his bloodstream now. That's what it's going to be like. We're going to feel this electric impulse of energy that's going to come with realizing that we're getting oxygen now. And we're going to use these networks to put together a plan. And because of the internet, and I don't mean the internet as the internet, because we can individually deal with each other, we will be able to set up virtual economies. And the best part of this, by the way, folks, is it's going to organize itself. You think you have to prepare committees, and you think we're going to have to set up, who are we going to, no, it'll just prepare itself. It will appear out of the soup, the same way that we've seen it happen so many times before. We saw it with the George Bush memos in the 2004 election, where people proved that the CBS memos were fraudulent. Nobody put that together. People just appeared out of the medium, out of the information soup, and they got together and they assembled into this molecule that utterly destroyed the Texas Air National Guard AWOL narrative and blew it out of the water. That saved the election for Bush in 2004. We saw it again in the days after the November 3rd steal. We saw people from everywhere putting together individual parts of the pieces, put together a compelling case, and at no point was this ever organized. It organized itself. That's the most amazing thing about this information technology, is to sit back and watch it organize itself. I had that experience yesterday, looking at the forums at BillWhittle.com as the new members coming in. I just simply went there and it was already up. It was done. I said it was like the magical workshop of the elves. You go to sleep at night, you wake up in the morning, and the shoes have been made overnight. So I think the big picture looks like this. They're going to begin to immediately put in place restrictions, taxes, and all the rest of it. There's not much we can do about that right now, other than to ignore them as much as possible, snub them. If it is within your power to do it without obeying them, great. If not, do to them what they do to us. Drag your feet. Drag your feet as slow as you can. Oh yeah, I'm working on complying with that as much as I can. I have a couple questions for you. Let the second wave industrial era centralized, top-down, that heavy, slow, expensive government, make them be the dinosaurs that they are. The future belongs to the quick and the agile. That's us, not them. They're the ones that want big centralized government, not us. That's what they want. They're the ones who want all of this power in one place. They're the ones that don't believe in dispersing either power or decisions to the people. They're the dinosaurs. They're the fossils. They're the behemoths. They're the lazy, stupid, fat, slow, expensive, system that has been on its way out for 10 or 15 years, and we're going to hasten that demise. Driven by people just exactly like you. This isn't a mystery. You don't need priests to come out of the temples. You don't need special technicians to appear. It happens. It's happening right now. We will find a way, very quickly, a number of ways, to do business amongst ourselves. And we will allow our natural ability to grow businesses and our passion for growth and hard work. We will keep that focused inside the family. And that will allow us to become stronger and stronger. Furthermore, it will deprive the parasites of their host organism. And as they get more and more fossilized, more and more bureaucratized, more and more stratified, more and more unified, more and more and more of this outdated, obsolete system, they become bigger, fatter, and slower. And our job will be to become smaller, quicker, and more agile, and to connect to each other underneath the feet of these extinct creatures. Practice the art of the snub. Let them have their virtual inauguration day with a capital locked down, razor wire, troops on the street with rifles. That is the image of the Biden-Harris administration. Let them have it. Let them own it. Don't give them any reason for that to be necessary. But if you do, I can't stop that. My advice would be, let them simply show the world what they've turned America into. And after that day is over, then we begin the serious business and the meticulous, specific business of figuring out the ways that we need to form what is essentially electronic bulletin boards so that patriots can do business with other patriots completely legally and make sure that all of our energies are concentrated on protecting ourselves and the people that love America as we gather strength, as we become more organized. This is what happens to an army that has suffered a sneak attack. You look around and you think the world's falling apart. It's not. This is a blessing. The only way that we could have lost this fight that we're going to win, the only way that we could have lost the fight would be for our adversaries to do what they should have done throughout history and which is impossible for them to do. They should have waited. They should have just simply waited and gone slowly. They should have absolutely just taken a little bit more time and then everything would just fall asleep slowly, but they cannot resist. They always attack too early. They always think they see their opportunity. They attack too early. That's exactly what they did here. They showed their hand. They showed their colors. They showed us how much control they have over social media and the news and all the rest of it. But more than anything, what Donald Trump gave us was he showed us in broad daylight just exactly who these people are and how far they are willing to go in order to deprive the American people of the right of self-determination. That's out in broad daylight now. That is the single greatest gift that president could give this country. It really and truly is, because it has never been about Donald Trump saving the country. And many of us, most of us, were guilty of that the whole time. No. He never claimed it either. It's not up to him to save the country. He showed us what we're facing. He gave us a look over the hill at the forces arrayed against us. It was never up to him to save America. And to think that it was up to him is to abdicate our own responsibility for it, which we're not going to do anymore. It's not up to him. It's up to us. It's our job. Our job to recover the government of this country. And now we know what we're facing, so that's what we're going to do. And we're going to be a part of it. And so are you. You're going to see it happen in front of your eyes. The level of operations going forward that I see in order to recover the country require things like trust and honor and commitment, because we're going to be making connections across the world, but especially across the country, with each other. And those will not function without trust. The left doesn't have any idea of trust or honor. They only believe in power. We believe in bigger things than that. And that's how we're going to win the fight. We're going to take politics and the economy of the United States, and we are going to lift it out of what's left of the second wave industrial era centralized economy. top-down bureaucratic structures and move them into networks that don't have hierarchies, non-hierarchical structures, networks that don't have a nerve center to take out, groups of people that don't have leaders that can be isolated or intimidated or whatever. No. No, they don't have any idea how to do this. They don't know how. And they never will. Because if they knew how to do this, they wouldn't be progressives. It's going to build itself and it's going to be fun. And that's what I want to leave you with today, actually. I think that's probably the most important thing. It's going to be fun. It's going to be fun. We talked on the Stratosphere Lounge about potential names and brands, and what we came up with were things that were just fun. They were cool. They were cool. They were lighthearted. They were self-deprecating to a degree. They were fun. They were an entirely new kind of politics, and this is what the country is dying for. You can feel it from everybody. Everybody wants something different. Everybody hates what the country's become. Everybody hates it. And the time is now and the place is here. So, as I said, two more days of us being PBS without the education camps and the abduction of your children. 101 memberships we need between now and the morning of the 21st. I know you can do it. I know you can do it because I know you want to be a part of this. I know you want to be inside that website with the forums, helping us figure out how we're going to take this entire politics and economy out of the hands of these criminals and put it back in the hands of the citizens. I know you want to be a part of that. So we will see you tomorrow. And the day after that, and the day after that, and the week after that, and the month after that, and the years after that. We'll be there along with everybody else, and we will be functioning on a plane that these people who are determined to take away our freedoms cannot only not operate on, they cannot even detect it.